looking at from 10 floors up.
It's the arms at his side. He had his arms at his side.
And face down.
Face down. I mean, that was a dead body. For a solid 45 minutes yesterday, that was a dead body.
And like, so when I put the picture up, I just enjoyed the comments of people like, oh, yeah, we get it. Like, I don't know if we did a great job of painting the picture, which is our job. And then people actually saw the picture and they were like, oh, did you guys call the police? Because this looks like a dead guy. And yes, we did. We called the police multiple times. So that was a lot of fun. Meanwhile,
over in Bologna.
In Bologna, someone texted that can there be updates on not dead guy forever? Look, I'll tell you this.
I'm going to check.
If we keep seeing a police presence down there mm-hmm. like we have today, yes, we're going to keep doing it. But I'm actually kind of excited about today's show. And it was one of those things where getting ready to leave for the show, I had in my mind, I was like, okay, this is what we're doing today. Me, Herbie, and Campy, we're gonna really do like White Sox like dissection. Like this is gonna be a full White Sox show. Like we're gonna go in and we're gonna talk about experts and we're gonna replay some of the stuff you guys had with Jason Benetti. And I was going through my files last night because I had this great conversation with Sierra Santos about Cuba and what it's like to get off the island and Spanish speaking players. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna go all in. And I sit down and Herbie's got the rundown. I was like, oh, Eddie Jackson just got more money than anybody. Poof, and we're back into Bears coverage. So we're gonna toggle between the two things, talking a lot about the White Sox today and talking about the Bears.
Yeah, I guess you got to give Ryan Pace some credit for that draft pick. That's a clear success story for a general manager.
Major win for him in the fourth round to find a guy that has already been an All-Pro, that clearly is one of the leaders on your defense. Now, if they could just, if the general manager could just go out and maybe get a strong safety.
Yeah.
So that Eddie can go back to playing the position that he plays.
You can find strong safeties. There's no excuse for not finding a representative strong safety.
You would think that they would have done that instead of having two of the same guy with one of those guys being way better than the other guy and then sending the way better than the other guy down into the box to go tackle.
I think that just underscores just how much the front office thought we got this for 2019. That was just, we got it. Everything we do is just going to be icing on a cake, pure success. We're going to be fine. I mean, they felt like they had it. They really did. And they missed in a couple of different scenarios. I think with the money that Eddie Jackson is getting, which is news, but I think everybody assumed that a contract like this was coming around, if not the highest paid, then certainly like this.
If you were looking for young Bears players to cash in, he would be number one on your list. He's earned every dollar.
Absolutely,
of the guaranteed money that he's gotten.
So I think then finding the right safety to pair with him is both schematically and financially the thing to do. Those safeties, a box safety, shouldn't cost as much as the $3.5 million that Hawk Clinton Dix did.
Well, what I kept wondering throughout the season was, would the Bears had been better served on not spending the ha-ha money and just saying, hey, Deion Bush, you're a safety that enjoys tackling people. That's your strength.
High-risk tackling, though.
True.
He's not as responsible a breakdown tackler as he is a flying sort of smash and grab guy.
But if you're going to have him come down in the box and let Eddie play the position that Eddie plays, would you have been better served to have that combination of guys instead of and using the ha-ha Clinton Dix money to do something else, whether it's tight end or whatever? I think Connor's point is the right one. They felt real good about their rooster.
They thought they had
They thought they had it. So I'm going to talk with Alex Brown about that at 1 o'clock.
I thought they did too.
What is the it there? Because if the it is taking a flyer on ha-ha Clinton Dix, I'm kind of with them on that. That's fine.
I liked the sign.
Like on paper, that made some sense. But not adding any depth at tight end, trusting the offensive line to develop the way you had, you know, Charles Leno and Bobby Massey on either side. They thought they had everything. You know, you sit at that press conference, you'd take a day or two and kind of digest it and everything. All I can come away with is they truly thought that everything that they had managed up to that point was just fine and only getting better in a league where you can't say that about one single player.
It seemed to me that that's a place where their optimism and the glass half fullness of the Bears under Pace and Nagy was a disservice to them.
Yep.
Where they never in a million years thought that there would be regression. And yet it was a year that was filled with it. And it's funny because it wasn't as if there weren't people going, well, you know, the 36 takeaway things is unsustainable. Like, you're not doing that again.
Not 36.
The fact that you almost cut it in half is troubling.
That's a lot.
But you kind of knew that some of that was going to happen, and it didn't feel like they steeled themselves for the possibility that there would be some actual regression.
Yeah, because they thought that they would score enough points, and we all kind of did.
I actually think that it's the backwards way. You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, Radio.com Sports Station. I don't think, what I mean by that, Dan, is I don't think that they took into account how big a deal it was for the defense to do what they did to help the offense. The 36 takeaways and the amount of scoring
that they
did on defense, that was your strength. And now you take that away and you still had a defense that was really good. But if they weren't setting the offense up with great field position or scoring on their own, they fooled themselves into thinking that the offense was good when really it was more the defense being ungodly good.
It's so difficult to demand, too, in this NFL that your defense be the thing that set the offense up. You can manage that in some seasons. But even, I mean, hell, you look at the Patriots and the way that defense declined over the back half of the season and the offense never picked itself back up. That is not a team that looks like the Patriots usually look. That's not a team that I'd trust that defense to help the offense out enough.
I've got another comp for you. The 2016 Cubs.
Sure.
Which to this day, if you look at that defense, if you look at the rate at which they turned batted balls into outs and what that covered for, even though they were the best base running team, they were a fabulous offense, but an all-time great defense. When that started to drop off, it changed everything around the margins.
Yeah, if you had a really good defense last year, and you ended up 8-8 because your offense took no steps forward. Your offense has been stunted since about week 11 of the 2018 season, and they didn't look at all of the reasons why. And it was very easy to talk about Cody Parkey, and that made things interesting. And you thought that you were going to get great numbers for your defense, and then you have a significant injury, which is something else that they didn't have
right
in 2018. You have a significant injury, and then your defense turns into pretty good. But they're not taking the ball away. You have minor changes, like the Eddie Jackson box safety stuff that takes him away from being able to take the ball from people.
Didn't they lead the NFC in points allowed? Is that right?
In points allowed? Yeah, yes. And meaning that they were the best team in allowing points.
They gave up the fewest points. I mean, that's a defensive win.
Correct.
That is, your defense did enough.
But, you know, we can argue about it, but I'm not going to. They didn't take into account how big of a deal the crazy number. Like, it wasn't close. The next closest team to them in takeaways last year was Cleveland. And so the Bears had 36, Cleveland had 31. So thinking that you were going to be at those numbers again, to me, is crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know. Do we have, it's not on record anywhere that they said they thought they would have that number of takeaways again.
No.
We don't know.
No.
It's very possible that they're nodding along saying, well, yeah, of course we knew we weren't going to take it off 36 times. But they probably weren't planning on 18. You know, at least when Lovie Smith was here, there was a cultural understanding about takeaways. And there was sometimes maybe you don't make the most secure possible tackle because of your opportunity to knock a ball away. And that was considered okay. That there was, you know, get the ball out. You had Peanut Tillman. You had guys who, like you say, were coached to do it. And maybe there was an understanding of something that could be more sustainable. That wasn't really the case here under Vic Fangio and now Chuck Pagano.
Well, it's a lot of things. It's your pressure, and it's another place where there was big time regression, the numbers of sacks and pressures that the Bears had. The ball was coming out. So in the case of Eddie Jackson, one of the things that I think makes him great is his anticipation of the ball coming out. And last year, you had defenses terrified. One, the quarterback can't climb the pocket because Akeem Hicks is there.
Yeah.
He's being double teamed, but he's still there. And he can't roll because Khalil Mack is there. So the ball's coming out. You see Prince Amukamara fall for double moves. Part of the reason he fell for double moves.
It was time to have a double move.
He was time that the ball was coming out.
Yep.
Because that's what had happened before. And that's what Eddie and Prince had done. And but
now,
Kyle.
But now he can hold on for one more hitch.
And now there's Kenny Golladay down the sideline going, ha ha, no pun intended. You fell for it because David Blau has more time to throw.
Just to sew up the numbers, the Bears were the lowest defense in terms of points per game, highest in the NFC, 18.6, the Vikings 18.9. The three defenses allowed fewer points per game. The Patriots at 14.1, which is just stupid. The Bills at 16.2, and the Ravens at 17.6.
So four playoff teams right there where the Bears are.
I mean, you look down the list, it's all, be good all playoff teams and, at the and top.
That points that finger right back at the Matt Nagy offense.
Correct. Dan Connor, thank you for a little overtime football conversation. It's much appreciated. Top of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Add some professional hockey to your holiday break. The four-time league champion Chicago Wolves host the Iowa Wild at 7 p.m. Saturday night at Allstate Arena. For tickets, visit chicagowolves.com. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and test drive the Hyundai Palisade today. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Robert in center field every day. Like, he's going to have to cover a lot of ground. Thank God he can. Because he's going to have to cover a lot of ground between whatever they put in right field. If it's Mazzara, fine. And then you got Aloy over on the left side. That's a lot of ground that he's got to cover to make some plays.
When are they going to get a manager?
Well,
Omar left.
Okay.
We thought.
So there's the next question. Can Ricky Renteria manage a playoff type team? And I have questions. I have legitimate questions about that. I don't like the way he uses the bullpen. I don't like the fact that he's an American League manager that bunts.
Yeah.
Early in games. I think that there are scenarios and situations where you bunt, even in the American League, but they are rare, and he does it a little too often for me, which is why, not just because he is great for the show, which is why when Joe Maddon was available, I was like, you should probably take a meeting with him.
I thought they were going to do to Ricky again, but they did on the north side.
I get it. It seems like bad form, and it would have looked terrible.
I don't care.
I don't care either.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Yeah, that was our guy, Joe Ostrowski. He was in here. We were talking about the breaking news, which is the Luis Roberts signing yesterday. Speaking of Joe, he's going to be in here with his merry band of gambling experts tomorrow and Sunday to break down the playoffs, the You Better Your Bet show from 9 a.m. until 11. It will be here on The Score. Those guys put a lot of hard work into it, and if you're thinking about making some moves, you should probably be listening to their show, and the show's going to be nationwide tomorrow, but it's going to emanate from here. I think that's very cool for the whole radio.com crew. I am Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. We are going to spend a lot of time talking about the White Sox today. The Bears also made news today with Eddie Jackson getting an extension, a well-earned extension for him with a lot of guaranteed money. We're going to spend some time talking about that too. Ryan McGuffey, who hosts the White Sox Talk podcast, is going to join us at 12:40. Alex Brown is going to join me at 1 o'clock. He was really the first guy that I heard talking about the way that the Bears were using Eddie Jackson. So I'm going to pick his brain about how they can change that going into 2020. But we start the show as we start all things with a rundown.
Run them down.
The Rundown.
Here is your rundown for Friday, January 3rd, 2020. Yesterday, the White Sox signed Luis Robert to a six-year, $50 million deal with two team options that can net him close to $100 million overall. Here's what Rick Hahn had to say about the Sox signing free agents.
the perception is that we are a desirable destination, not only obviously because of the city we play in, but because of the way we've positioned this club for the foreseeable future. And guys want to be part of that. It's a good spot for us to be in. And it's perhaps a little different than where we were even a year ago when we had to sort of lay things out a little more directly with potential free agents about how this thing could come together. Now they're seeing it with their own eyes and certainly seeing the transactions seemingly further that process along. And there's not only enthusiasm apparently with the fan base, but there's enthusiasm amongst the player community as well about what this team is capable of doing over the next several years.
I agree with him, and I've got a lot of questions, and we're going to talk a ton about the White Sox today, and we're going to talk about Luis Robert in a couple different ways. I would imagine that the Grandal deal did open things up. I'm curious to see what they do with what's left, because if you look at the contract that they have for Robert, they're paying him $1.5 million this year. There's still room. If you look at the, I think it's $11 million over the next 3 years. So if you're the White Sox, you still have plenty of room to add on, and I hope that they do that. The Bulls were interesting last night, and then they lost.
So Satoransky deep in the left corner, holding and looking, and the lob comes down, and Carter has it to mark it, and one bounce, top side three, off the mark, and the ball game is over, and Utah hangs on for a 102-98 win.
You know what's funny about the Bulls? Anytime that people start kind of talk, I remember this happened last week. So, you know, I do the football stuff over at NBC Sports Chicago, and Goff does the basketball stuff over there. So I was doing the Dave Wannstedt show, and we were sharing the set. So the basketball guys came in. So Jay and Kendall, they came in, and I'm sitting there, and we were talking about the Bulls, and KC's on their panel too. And he goes, yeah, you know, if they win this game, they're one game out of a playoff spot. And then they lost. It's like any time that anyone even brings up the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference and the Bulls' proximity to it, they just go right out and lose. And they go, hey, if you were thinking about getting interested again, don't, because we do this all the time. Anything interesting from the game last night? I did enjoy the marketing save through Rudy Gobert's legs that ended up in the Wendell Carter Jr. basket. That was fun.
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed how aggressive Wendell Carter was in getting rebounds and trying to high point the ball. He did a really good job of that, and just him not being that afraid of Gobert in general. I thought that was good, and I like that Ryan Arcidiacono didn't play.
Me too.
First game of the year, he got a DMPCD.
It's a guy that's gotten a lot more run than he deserves. He belongs in a rotation, but not getting as many minutes as he's gotten over the last two seasons. I'm just going to say that. All right, on to hockey. You know who's struggling? The Blackhawks.
Quist got room, dropped it to Gustafson, a shot blocked by Horvat. They fight for it. Horvat came up with it, and he's going to hit the empty net.
That made it 7-5. Hawks lose to Vancouver. Meanwhile, closer to home, Eddie Jackson has been one of the best safeties in the game. He was an all-pro last season. The numbers were down from a takeaway standpoint overall, but including his production, we have two interceptions this past season, one coming in the last game against backup dudes. So still, if you've watched him play, you know that this is one of the best players on the Bears, one of the best defensive players in the NFL. And he just got broke off with a big-time extension, including $33 million of guaranteed money.
Snap back to Sean Mannion. Mannion standing there for quite a while. Going to launch it deep down the right side. A free ball up in the air, and it's intercepted by Eddie Jackson. And he takes his feet and slides it down, and that'll end the game. A fade-to-black moment for the Bears in what is not a playoff season, but a finish against the Vikings for their eighth win. They finished 500 at 21-19, the final score.
Highlight courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Jeff Joniak on the call. All right, so here's our plan today. That's the end of the rundown for Friday, January 3rd, 2020. We plan on talking a lot about the White Sox today. We're going to let you hear from different voices about where they're at. You'll hear a little bit of Jason Benetti. You'll hear from our guy, Ryan McGuffey, about the White Sox. And we're also going to talk more about the Bears. So if you're a White Sox fan, you're like, man, I need to get my fix. Things are looking up. Guess what? We hear you. And we're going to do a lot of that on the show today, including having some